Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. The woods. Every year, a group of kids would gather in the woods known as Woodley Hollows. They would tell scary stories to each other, but tonight it was supposed to rain. Only two people showed up in the woods, Jenny and Lisa. They did not know that there had been reports of missing children in these woods. Jenny wanted to go and walk around. Lisa stayed at the stone where they normally told the stories. So Jenny checked her watch. It was 10 p.m. "I'll be back in an hour," Jenny said. Lisa nodded. Jenny started walking. After a few minutes, Jenny heard footsteps behind her. She stopped. The footsteps stopped. Jenny turned around. "Lisa, is that you? Did you decide to come along? Did you get scared waiting at the stone?" Jenny heard a footstep walk closer. Jenny walked on. She looked at her watch again. 10:20. Wow, Jenny thought, only 20 minutes? She sat down on a log. She thought she saw a small child walking towards her. "Mommy, is that you, Mommy?" the child said. Jenny stood up. "No, I'm not." "When and where was the last time you saw your mommy?" Jenny asked politely. The little girl choked back a sob and said, 140 years ago, right on this log." Jenny was confused. 140 years ago? Jenny thought, but this little girl only looks like she's maybe 5 or 7. "Are you sure it was 140 years ago?" Jenny asked. The little girl said, "Yes, but, the little girl paused. "But the man said if you bring a friend, someone will die." Jenny was starting to wonder if this was a trick or a scare. "What man?" Jenny asked. "The man who killed my mommy. He said that if someone ever brings a friend with them, then they will get killed." The little girl had a look on her face as if she was possessed. "Oh my God. Does that mean I will die?" Jenny asked. The little girl looked back and said, "He's coming for you, Jenny. Run! Run away!" Jenny looked where the little girl was pointing and saw a demon-like figure of a man. "Wait!" Jenny shouted. The man stopped walking and the girl stared at Jenny. "What is going on here? I don't know if this is a dream or not, but it's scary." The man started for Jenny. Jenny started running and tripped over a broken branch on the ground. The man took her in his arms and dropped her over a cliff. Back at the stone where Lisa was waiting, she had heard some screams. She looked at her watch. 12:01. Lisa knew already what had happened. Lisa remembered what had happened to her little brother right at 12 p.m. Lisa walked down to where Jenny had been dropped and put her hand on her cheek. One tear dropped onto Jenny's forehead. Lisa remembered that one teardrop will make Jenny come back to haunt these woods forever. This is a story claimed to be true. I'm not sure, but that's pretty much what happened. The little girl was possessed, and the demon side of the girl killed Jenny by throwing her off the cliff. Some say they sit on the stone and listen to the scream of Jenny. The Nightmare Beast. There once was a man named Tom. He was skilled with guns. He was so good he could throw a penny in the air and he could shoot it. But one mission would cost him more than his cover. It was a dark and snowy night, and it was freezing. Tom was dropped off in the area to do some recon. It was very cold, and he was wearing a light jacket. He heard the howl of gray wolves in the distance. His only light was the light of the full moon. An enemy militia was spotted in the area, so he had to shoot anything that moved. He was positioned on a hill near a wooded area. He could see a lot of things from where he was. He looked through his scope and thought he saw something moving. He couldn't tell what it was, but it was big and it was about 200 yards away. He thought it was a bear or a deer. He started to worry because it was getting closer. He built up the courage to open fire. So he aimed at the creature as it was approaching a clearing and he fired. When the bullet hit it, he heard a roar, but the beast was not killed or even wounded. He looked through his scope and didn't see it, so he thought it was dead, but then a giant creature jumped up. This creature was a horrible beast that stood 8 feet high and had a mouth of razor-sharp teeth. It had orange hair all over its body, and it grabbed Tom by the neck and sniffed him and then took one bite and ate him. They later found Tom's body half-eaten. They later interviewed the locals, who said they heard a screaming, a roar, then gunshots, and then nothing. All they found were bloody footprints of a large beast. So that was the end of Tom the Sniper. The Witches. We live in a small town in Pennsylvania called Enon Valley. It's very small, but it's very old, and the area around this town knows well of hauntings, and its past include witch trials. On occasion, my aunt and other told us kids that some witch hunts did take place in this part of Pennsylvania, and we felt our blood kind of run cold when we discovered how these ladies met their doom on stakes lit by torches. There was a story about a horrible burning, a murder. It happened in woods not too far from where we lived. In those days, which was back in the 1800s, there were very few witch trials in Pennsylvania, but many accusations by superstitious and fearful folk. It seemed like too many women were accused of worshiping the devil back then. Some said all a lady needed to do was to be really old with a wart on the end of her nose, and her goose was as good as literally cooked. Anyway, after the people decided this particular woman dabbled with the devil, they burned her deep in the woods. She screamed as the fire grew hotter and shouted at the people with all the strength she could muster, "I'm innocent!" Her screams were fierce and loud until the heat began to melt her vocal cords, which made her screams sound horrible. The poor Quaker lady fell victim to lies in a temporarily insane and credulous mob. Years went by, and on some damp, cool nights, folk around those parts to this day hear her screaming deep in the woods, an awful, terrible, high-pitched screech. I leaned forward when listening to this part. "What did the murderers do when they began to hear this terrible, high-pitched scream?" I asked my aunt, who was telling the story. She looked into our eyes. This worried the town folk very much. They tried to shut her up for fear some stranger or would-be traveler with clout might pass through and hear her screams also and investigate until they discovered the truth. The people even sent out a preacher to exorcise the screaming demon, as they referred to it. The exorcism ritual only added coals to the fire that enveloped the lady that they had burnt. Her screams grew even louder and more perpetual in nature. As many more years went by and the perpetrators began to die off, the screams began to diminish. Yes, that gruesome night, each passing of one of the members of that wicked mob lessened the number of screams. My aunt told us that the burning happened in the very early 1800s, so the people must all be dead as well as the screams. But are the screams really gone? As a young lad, I loved raccoon hunting, and though I love animals, I did hunt a lot as a young buck, and I hope you all do not hold that against me. Pelts were worth a good sum back then, and so were good coon dogs. I owned a purebred German Shepherd. Now, most people laugh at this, but Lobo was one of the best coon dogs I have ever known, and I had my experiences with plenty of hounds. I'll tell you now, I did not trade Lobo for any blue tick, red tick, black and tan, English or American Walker, red bone or bloodhound. No way. Back to my story. One cool fall night, Lobo and I took off on the hunt. I decided to forge further into the forest than usual. Lobo treed two coons early that evening, but I did no harm to them. This night was just a practice for the season that had not started. "Lobo, let's go deep into the woods tonight. I want to recon some areas we have yet to recon." I laughed at my words, and Lobo looked like he was laughing too. We trudged on through the dark woods. I always had an uncanny way of seeing well at night. I did not need to use my headlamp much at all. I'm not partial to lighting up the woods with a flashlight, for it only allows one to see objects that are very close to him or her. I like a full view. Well, on we went, and that's when I heard it myself for the first time. The awful, high-pitched, horrible scream, like that of someone dying a terrible death, it sent shivers up and down my spine. Quickly, I ran towards the direction of the scream with my rifle in hand. Did some murderous villain have a girl out here in these daunting woods ready to do her harm? Many thoughts raced through my mind. The screams moved all around me, so it seemed. I realized the screams were not moving hither thither, but I was. I settled down, took in some deep, needed breaths, and plotted my course. I moved methodically through the forest now. I tamed my emotions as I walked over the crest of a spill pile. Below me, I saw a fiery glow. My mind instantly thought of foxfire, but this was too large for foxfire or swamp gas. The screens picked up fiercely somewhere very close to the reddish glow. I half stumbled down the spill pile, piles of shale and dirt created by stripping the earth's crust for coal, and stopped right at the spot where the screaming originated. The fiery glow dissipated, but the scream continued. I felt the trauma that took place here. I called out to this vexed spirit. "Ma'am, you're among friends now. We know you are innocent. Your killers are all gone. You do not have to prove your innocence any longer. You can stop screaming and go home now. Your loved ones are waiting for you." The screaming stopped and all was peaceful. I left that area and headed home, Lobo right behind me. Time passed, and one night while hunting again in that area, the screams returned. So I asked my sister Ruthie to accompany me one night where the screams occurred. I wanted another witness. She did, and she too heard what I did. The screaming demon. Before I left Enon Valley, the screams all but died away. To this day, I have no idea if they sometimes return, but somewhere deep in the woods between Hell's Hollow Road and Enon Valley Road, the screaming might still be heard. She's possibly crying out yet, demanding justice that eludes her. If you are ever in that area, you might want to take a walk in the dark woods. Maybe you'll get lucky as you feel your spine crawl when those terrible screams echo through the forest. Could she still be screaming, or is she finally at peace? Do you think you would be brave enough to find out? The ghost in the basement. I always hesitate to tell this story. If you don't believe in ghosts, then you won't believe this tale. Trust me, before this happened, I did not in any way, shape, or form believe in ghosts. And although this was my only experience with one, it convinced me they do indeed exist. I was 17 years old. It was 1969. I was a junior in high school. My parents had bought a new home a couple of miles from their present location. They were keeping the old house, so there was no real sense of urgency to get moved. I was a typical 17-year-old, smarter than my parents, ready to handle anything. I asked if I could stay in the new house while we moved. It was summer, and I didn't have to go to summer school that year. My parents agreed. The new house wasn't really new. It was one of the first homes built in Coronado, sometimes in the early 1800s. Two-story wooden structure supposedly built by an old sea captain. I imagine when it was first built, it had a great view of San Diego Bay and all the ships coming in and out. It was my third night in the house, and I had gotten used to all the pops and creaks of a wooden house as evening comes on. I was in my room reading a book when I heard a noise downstairs. It sounded like something had gotten knocked over. I grabbed a baseball bat and went down the old stairs as quietly as I could. It was dark except for glow at the bottom of the kitchen door. I listened and could hear nothing, so I quietly opened the door. The glow was coming from my dad's flashlight. Somehow it had fallen off the counter and landed on the floor, turning itself on. Smiling at my foolish fear a moment earlier, I picked up the flashlight. As I did, something caught my eye. Something on the wall where the flashlight beam had been shining. I went over for a closer look, and there appeared to be a piece of leather stuck between two boards of the wall. I tugged on it and the wall opened. There was a secret door where our refrigerator was going to go. Through the door was a set of dusty stairs leading down into the darkness. I figured this was either a food storage or maybe even a smuggler's hideout at one time. There was no light switch, so with a bat and flashlight in hand, I went down the loudly creaking stairs. The darkness was so thick it seemed to be fighting with the beam of the flashlight. At the bottom of the steps was a room about 12 feet on each side. The dust was thick. No one had been down there in a long, long time. There were a few empty crates lying around, but not much else. I started to leave when I noticed a faint glow in one corner. I turned the flashlight on, but I couldn't see anything. If I moved the flashlight away, the glow would return. I turned off the flashlight and waited for my eyes to adjust to the darkness. The glow seemed to shift and changed as I watched it. As my eyes got used to the darkness, I could make out a shape in the glow. It was a woman dressed in turn-of-the-century clothing. She was kneeling in the corner, and I could see her plain as day as she looked at me, saying something I couldn't hear, and pointed at the corner where she was. "I can't hear you," I said. "What's wrong?" She looked frustrated and pointed urgently at the wall and faded from sight. Okay, so that was strange. I turned on the flashlight and investigated the wall. It was some kind of heavy wood, just like the rest of the room. Then I noticed one board that was slightly different from the others. It had square nail heads instead of round. Ever since I was a Cub Scout, I carried a Swiss Army knife with me and pulled it out now. I pried at the board and was surprised at how easily it became loose. Behind the board was a hollowed-out space. A few inches in was something wrapped in an oilcloth. Hoping there weren't any black widows in there, I reached in and pulled it out. The oilcloth unwrapped easily, and I found a small wooden box bordered with metal straps and a small lock on the hasp. I was about to try the lock when a loud noise upstairs made me jump and run back to the kitchen. The lights were on, and it made me blink after being in the dark for so long. As I adjusted, I saw that a canister of flour my mom had on the counter had fallen off and spread flour over most of the floor. What freaked me out is, as I watched, small footprints like that of a woman appeared in the dust and moved toward the front door. I could only guess that it was the woman from the storage room leaving. I cleaned up the mess. I knew my mom would blame me. There was no one else around. The next morning, my dad came over to do some painting, and I showed him the secret door. I didn't mention anything about my experiences. Who would believe me anyway? My mom and dad were religious, and the only ghost they believed in was the Holy Ghost. To this day, almost 40 years later, I haven't told them what happened. Nothing else strange ever happened in that house, nor did I ever see the woman again. You can believe the story or not, that's up to you. I know what I saw, and that's all that matters to me. The abandoned house. About 2 years ago, my mom's friend had a party at his house in Misty Cliffs. We were invited, and I took my friend Karen. It was a great party. We swam, drank cocktails, and danced. About an hour before we were to leave, Karen noticed the neighbor's house for the first time. It was old, rundown, and the front door flapped open in the wind. We asked my mom's friend Daniel about it. He said the owners had deserted it about 4 years earlier. Of course, we were warned not to go there, but Karen and I love a good scare in an old abandoned house. When everyone had moved inside for the birthday cake, we stayed outside. I threw an old rope I had found in the back shed over the wall and into the garden next door. The wall wasn't high, only about 2 meters, and we slid down the rope one after the other easily. We had to pick our way across the overgrown lawn and through some brambles that had sprung up. There was a funny little shed thing next to the house, and we decided to go there first. Nothing exciting, some old paintings and writings on the wall. We went to the house, and I cautiously pushed the door open. It creaked, and a huge gust of wind blasted us from the other open door across the landing. I chickened out. "Karen, this is scary," I said to her. But she pushed me forward into the house. We stepped inside. The whole place was still completely furnished with very dusty couches and chairs. We walked around a bit in silence and made our way to the staircase. It creaked as we walked up. Very spooky. At the top, there were all these paintings of animals, mostly birds. There was only one window with a small crack of sunlight shining through. It was pretty dark. This time, Karen moaned that it was creepy up there. I was about to agree to go down when right in front of us, one of the bedroom doors opened a crack. We stood there frozen in horror, clutching each other, and watched as the door opened more and more. A little girl in a green dress came out and looked us straight in the eye. This deserted house had someone besides us in it. We couldn't make out the girl's features in the dark, but then she came forward. I screamed at her hair and skinny arms. Without thinking, I turned and fled down the stairs screaming. I ran straight out of that house, not even looking back for Karen. I tore through the brambles and weeds and came to the rope. I tried hauling myself up, but I couldn't. Karen came, but she too couldn't get back up. "Help!" we started calling. "Help!" Daniel came running, and with his help, we managed to get back over the wall. Now, I know why we were warned not to go to that house. And from now on, Karen and I will never do that again. And of course, we don't know who was that little girl. The scenic route. My car radio has never worked the way it should, so when my friends and I went for a drive without radio, it was a pretty silent drive. We had just come back from a Christmas fair. I was the driver and decided to take the scenic route. Yeah, stupid horror movie recipe. But I'm one of those people who like to see the trees at night. I'm not scared of the woods. In fact, I'm the kind of person who goes into the woods. I tried the radio to distract myself from the sounds of giggles in the back. I played with the dial. Hello? Where are you? Everyone stopped. The voice was coming from the radio. A little shaken, I laughed, and Natasha joined in. We had obviously picked up on some radio drama. I'm cold and my feet hurt. I want to come inside. We were all silent and then just decided to ignore it. And sure enough, it went back into the crackly noise of static. I put in a tape, just something that would keep me awake throughout the journey. I joked to the girls singing along with Uptown Girl while the mist gathered outside. Suddenly, Stacy screamed, "Jamie, look out!" I slammed on the brakes. A girl stood in front of the car. She was wearing raggedy jeans and a tank top. She looked like a mosher. The tape in the machine stopped. The crackle of the static came back. I got out of the car ready to rise up a storm and looked at her. She was freezing, shaking so fiercely. "Hey, love, you all right?" I walked a little closer. She was hugging herself, her head down, hair covering her face. I took a good look at her clothes. They were dirty and torn. She wasn't wearing any shoes. "What happened to your clothes? Did someone hurt you?" "It's okay, love. We're all girls here. We can help you. Get you checked out?" She looked up a little as she had only just realized I was there. "I'm so cold." I flinched. She sounded like the girl on the radio, but nevertheless, I turned to get a blanket out of the car. "Jamie, what's going on?" said Stacy from the car. "I don't know," I replied. "This girl, something happened to her. We need to get her to a hospital." I held up the blanket and turned to see if she'd gone. Suddenly, Lisa screamed. The girl had her face straight up to the passenger window. And what I saw still keeps me awake at night. Her eyelids and lips were cut off, and blood streamed down her face like tears. "I'm so cold and my feet hurt. Get up and let me come inside." Only now her voice sounded distorted. I jumped in the car and sped off. The girls in the back were hugging each other and crying, while Lisa sat and rocked back and forth with her hands at her face. I'm not the kind of girl who prays. In fact, if I did pray, I'm sure God would have trouble remembering me. But that night, I prayed really hard and drove as fast as I could until my feet hurt. Something under the bed. I remember this day like it happened to me yesterday. My grandfather told me to go grab something from under his bed, and I was happy to do it. As I walked into his bedroom, it was pitch black. I could hardly see a thing, but I knew my way around the room and where to go and where everything is because, well, I spent most of my time going through his things and organizing them. I got on my hands and knees and I looked under the bed and saw two pairs of eyes just staring at me, clear as day. And I heard the scratching, like scratching on the rug. And I felt my body being pulled under the bed. I tried to move. I tried to scream. My body felt like it was frozen, and I could feel my heart beating faster and faster. This feeling wasn't a good feeling, and it felt like this presence wanted to harm me. I didn't really want to find out. Finally, after about 2 minutes of me just staring and being frightened and frozen, my grandfather walked into the room and asked me, "What are you doing?" And my body just got released, and I just started to cry. It was like this huge pressure let up from my body, and I just felt relieved. I don't know what would have happened to me that day, and I'd rather never find out. It affects me a lot till this day. I won't look under a bed in the dark, and when I'm walking in the dark, I constantly feel like something's watching me and waiting to grab me. I don't know if this is a ghost story, but what I do know is this scared the crap out of me, and that it did happen. It is true. Crazy man. At the age of 19, I decided I was old enough to buy a place of my own. There was this one very cheap apartment that I was interested in. I remember asking the man who tried to sell the house to me why the apartment was so cheap, because really, it wasn't so bad. "Because it's haunted," he said in the most serious tone I'd ever heard in my life. But despite the seriousness of his voice, I started laughing loudly. "You don't have to believe it," he said, clearly annoyed with my reaction. "I don't, I'm sorry," I said. "Then buy it," he challenged me. So I did. After 3 months of living there, I'd already forgotten about the words of the crazy man, as I'd like to call him to my friends. I had adjusted pretty well until strange things started to happen. First, things disappeared. I blamed it on myself. I must have put them out of sight, I thought. But then stuff started to fall off tables and bookshelves and out of closets while I wasn't even nearby. I was sure it couldn't be my fault because most of the stuff was either in the middle of the table or on top of very high shelves where they couldn't fall off. Also, the closet doors were locked. It couldn't be possible that my clothes were suddenly spread around my bedroom, right? Well, I saw it with my own two eyes. It laid everywhere, and I hadn't put it there. But even after those things, I still didn't think about the words of the crazy man. Until one night, I heard voices in the living room. I picked up my bedside lamp, which I wanted to use as a weapon if necessary, and silently walked towards the living room. It was clear nobody was there, but I still heard the voices. Then suddenly someone appeared in front of me. I could see right through the girl. I started screaming loudly. The girl disappeared and left me crying on the floor. Had I just seen a ghost? And right there on the floor, I remembered his words. Because it's haunted. I started laughing at myself. I must have imagined the girl. The words must have lingered in my head, and I've made myself afraid without thinking. But night after night, I heard voices, and every time I went to see who was there, I saw the same thing, the girl. I remember she was dressed in this beautiful white nightgown. One night, I decided to talk to her because I could so clearly hear what she was saying. "Who's there with you?" My voice came out shaky. She must have heard the fear. "Don't worry, he's my friend. But he doesn't want to show himself." "Show himself?" I asked in confusion. "Yeah, you see, he's the reason why I don't live here anymore," the girl said. "But you do, sort of." Though I felt pretty insane for talking to a ghost, I didn't want to give up until I knew everything. "Sort of, yes. But that's not enough for my friend, you see." Her voice suddenly didn't sound so nice anymore. "He wants this place for himself. But there's always a stupid teenager who comes and claims the place is theirs. We want it back, if you like it or not. You see, I used to be like you, a living girl. But my friend over there," she pointed at something in the corner on my left, but I didn't see anyone, "wanted the place for himself again. But I refused to go, just like you. And then he killed me. It was very hurtful. You should go when you still can." I thought the girl was insane. I shook my head. "It's mine now. I bought it," I said stubbornly. Suddenly, I couldn't breathe anymore. Something was choking me. I screamed in terror, but nothing changed until I felt pressure on my belly. The pink shirt I was wearing was red now. Was I bleeding? I wrapped my arms around my waist to stop the bleeding, but it didn't work. The most unbearable pain fell over me. "Now you'll die too," the girl said. She was now standing a few feet away from me. "Why?" I whispered. "Because you didn't listen," I screamed one last time, and then everything went blank. The next day, I woke up in the hospital. The nurses told me someone had broken into my house and that I tried to stop him, but that he attacked me. The neighbor heard me screaming and called the police. "Don't make me go back to that apartment," I begged the nurse. She just nodded. Of course, I knew that what she told me didn't happen, but I knew better than to tell her my version. I recovered from all my injuries and decided I wanted to visit the crazy man and ask him why the house was haunted. He told me that a young boy had been murdered in that house because his dad didn't want him to live on his own. Because the boy was so fond of his own place, he decided to stay and kill everyone who didn't want to go. Just like the girl in the white nightgown, whose name was Judy. She had been killed 2 years before my attack. I was very lucky that I survived. So take my advice. Always believe the crazy man. The thing in the shed. Behind my house, there's a very old broken down shed. It is extremely scary looking. It looks like an old murder scene. I have been there about 20 times with my brothers. We have been in the shed about 10 times to find lots of creepy stuff. For example, barbed wire, rusty knives, rocks shaped as perfect half circles. Yesterday, we went to the shed 3 times. At 2:45, we went to the front of the shed, and a dog from across the woods started barking at something behind the shed. So as normal kids would do, we ran back to our house. At 3:20 p.m., we decided we would attempt to enter the shed once again. With both of my brothers behind me, I led the way into the shed. When we were about 6 or 7 feet away from the broken door, I noticed a glass bottle on the ground, and I started to pick it up. I heard some leaves rustling inside the shed, so I quickly looked up to just get a glimpse of something jumping towards me from one of the dark stalls behind the wall. It had a large horse head, and the body was gray and white. It made a huge thump. Many times I've considered what this thing was. I've considered a horse because of its head, but it jumped behind a wall. That would not have been able to hide a horse, and I did not see anybody when it jumped. I have considered a dog, but a dog would have chased us, and this thing didn't. Plus, this thing's head was about 6 feet off the ground, too big for a dog. I've thought of a cat or a raccoon, but it made way too big of a thump when it hit the ground. I've also considered a deer, but the color of it was gray and white, nowhere near the color of a deer. It was not my imagination because even though I am the only one that saw it, my brother heard it. After I saw the thing, I screamed and ran, and neither my brothers or I even dared to look back. Today we began to walk towards the shed so that we could take a picture for this story. When we were halfway there, we heard a rooster. But this rooster sounded as if it were in extreme pain, like a dying cock-a-doodle-doo. Not one of us would take the picture, because in truth, we really didn't want to know what was the thing inside the shed.